Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 22nd of August, Anno Domini 2015. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Before I start the news, I want to remind you, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And for Pete's sake, call early. All right. Windows users are encouraged to update their computers as soon as possible after Microsoft pushed out a patch for an issue in Internet Explorer that lets attackers remotely run malicious code with whatever privileges the current user has. The critical vulnerability affects Internet Explorer versions 7 through 11 on Windows.
Which probably means, you know, 6 and 5 and 4 that people are still using.
Yeah, that's all right. Of them, though, for the most part.
On Windows 7, 8, 8.1, 10, and Vista, Windows Server 2008, 2012, 2012 R2, and the Windows Server Technical Preview are all affected. But Internet Explorer runs in an enhanced security configuration on server, so that should mitigate the effects of the problem, but you should still update anyway. The out-of-band patch was released outside Microsoft's typical Patch Tuesday release cycle, which allows users and administrators to update the computers quickly, and which really tells you just how serious this is. Microsoft Edge, the new browser included in Windows 10, isn't affected by the vulnerability. However, Microsoft's new operating system also ships with a copy of Internet Explorer 11 installed, which is why it's getting updated. The vulnerability is caused by an issue with Internet Explorer improperly accessing objects in memory that could corrupt memory in a way that allows attackers to execute code with the current user's privileges. If that user has administrator capabilities, the attacker would be able to take complete control of a computer and do things like modify files, install programs. This is why we tell you don't run as the administrator. Users without administrator privileges will be slightly better off, though an attacker still will be able to do anything they're able to do. Windows 10 received the patch as part of a cumulative update that also includes all of the prior patches Microsoft released for the system, the fourth that Microsoft has released since the launch of Windows 10 on July 29th. That's right. It's not even a month, and there have been four huge updates to Windows 10. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and that's, of course, bites with a Y, as Francis would like us to remind you, is emergency update for Internet Explorer. Your choices are, I've already got the patch, I'll update immediately, I'll probably get to it, and who uses IE? So far, we've had about 24 poll voters, and I predicted, I was a little shy in my prediction, I figured 80% of you would say who uses IE. Turns out it's 88% so far. 26, it's still 88%. So I know you'll have more to say about this because this is just yet another egregious load of nonsense. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating topics, you'll see the forums. And the second forum choice, of course, is the poll discussion. And the top choice so far there is 22AUG15, emergency update for Internet Explorer. So far, there's a few of us who have written in there, and you can join the ranting and mayhem and foaming at the mouth there. And then join us here live at the studio. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Stupid Google just changed everything on their YouTube live streaming.
Yeah.
And now I got to figure out how to do it again. So the stream's not up yet.
Stream's not up yet, but we'll be up shortly. The audio stream is up. I don't know how many people we got listening, but the stream is up. The
yeah, what happened to that big number that used to be on that screen?
Yeah, it's not there anymore. That's he can see it. We can't.
Yeah.
That's a you. Well, they used to be big enough that we could see it across the studio. Now we can't. Well, I just said he's the one who asked. Don't get. I will step over there and be beaten senseless. So here.
Wait a minute.
I said I'm the one who would be beaten senseless.
I was gonna say.
You were the Marine. I'm not. I'm just. Believe me when I tell you.
You don't need to come over. I can shut you down before you even stand up.
But yeah, so Internet Explorer, look, we've talked about this for years. It's a huge target, mainly because it is on every single Windows system by default. Edge will get there. Edge is on 10, and going forward, that's the one everybody will be using.
Hopefully not.
Well, but right, if you're using Windows, that's the.
But a lot of folks are fed into the wrong fallacy. And that they said, well, you got to use that because it comes with Windows. You can't use any other browser.
Right.
Wrong.
Well, as we saw last week, most of our users don't use Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
They use Firefox or Chrome.
Yeah.
The big thing, of course, is as I said in the middle of the story, don't run as administrator. Don't run your system as the administrator. If you do, then a problem like this means that you will be, any virus that comes in will be running just as you are, as the administrator. If you're only running as a user, it can screw you up a little bit, but it can't screw up the operating system itself. So if you're doing good backups and you've got good antivirus and blah, 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 you're fairly well protected. But if you're running as the administrator, then all bets are off. You're just kind of done.
And let's call on Apple and Microsoft to change their auto setup mode so that it sets you up as a standard user.
Well, that would be ideal, as a matter of fact. Linux does that.
Yeah.
Most versions of Linux set you up as a regular user, but give you access to root or the admin, as Linux calls it, root. And so you can run things as root, but you have to go through have to jump through a couple of minor hoops in order to do that, which means you now have a much better chance of not propagating a virus, a major virus onto your system, than you do when you're running as the administrator. And Microsoft and Apple really need to step up and understand that one of the biggest holes in both of those operating systems is the fact that the initial user is the admin user.
At least Apple disables root by default.
Right.
If you know what you're doing, you can enable it, but root is disabled.
Right. And that's, of course, well, it's not disabled on Linux. You can still get to it and run it, but it's not the standard.
Yep.
And so it's an issue that's been around for an awfully long time, and we need to, these companies, Microsoft and Apple, need to step up and make sure that, in fact, people are not admins. It means that when you do something administratively, it's a little hoop you have to jump through, just like on Linux. But you know what? It's not incredibly onerous, and it keeps your machine that much safer. Ooh, I have to type in a password to do something administrative. Get over yourself. Sorry, it's just the way that works. 10 is better. 10 is better than 7 or anything before it was, but still you need to be aware of that. You need to know that set up the first user not as you. Set up that initial user as someone else. They can be the administrator. And don't call it admin or root. Call it something else. Call it something innocuous. Call it Betty unless your name is Betty.
A pet's name.
Call it a pet's name, or call it the
favorite color
name, or what, it doesn't matter.
Everybody's got a favorite color. Call it by that.
Sure. And so you then, once that's done, assuming you can spell fuchsia or chartreuse.
red.
Red. So then you set up a second user using red. You set up a second user, which is your name and your stuff, and then you log in as that person rather than as that administrator, And that makes it a little bit safer. Not safe, but safer. And so that's it takes a couple extra minutes when you're setting your system up for, you know, the lifetime of that system being a little more secure. I don't know why you wouldn't take the time to do it.
I know it.
But people don't, you know. They want to do what they want to do.
I've had a few folks still asking about Windows 10, and, you know, they're still very leery about updating, and I don't. You know, right now, you know, as I had that one client turn around, and it got halfway in there. There's just nothing we could do. Couldn't go forwards, couldn't go backwards.
Yep.
And that's what's going to happen, because when Windows does the assessment and seeing if it's going to work with Windows 10, it's a best guess. And there's going to be some other factors sometimes that it can't always, you know, predict. And you get hiccups like that, that'll go in there and do half of it.
Yep.
Because that's basically what it was. Half of the Windows 10 was in there, but we couldn't get back to Windows 7.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, I mean, there is no rush. It just came out, and we have a year.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, let other people find the problems.
Like
let,
we said, wait
let
until
me
10.
Find the problems. I put it on my machine as soon as I could, because that's what I do.
10.1, you know, wait for 10.1, or if they go with 10.2, because odd numbers don't always seem to be good.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a pretty big update, and a lot of stuff was in there. What's weird is Microsoft isn't telling people what's in the updates anymore. Mm-mm. It used to be there was a file that came along with it that said this update contains blah, 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 which does blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Or then they started putting it on their blog saying the latest update does this and this and this. Now they don't even do that anymore. They're all blind updates, and people are angry about that.
Yeah, because it'd be good. It's like a double-edged sword.
Right.
It could be good. It could be bad, because something else that you're using and it's working fine, all of a sudden this update could totally muck it up.
Right, and everybody's always telling us, don't update blind, you know what you're putting in your machine, yada, yada. Of course, you know, Apple does the same thing, unless you know where to go to look.
They don't tell what's in the update, period.
Right.
To anybody.
Right.
Because, they say they don't want the bad guys to see it and reverse engineer the fix.
Right, wrong.
So all it says is improve stability, improve security, you know, improves right. this, improves right. that.
Whereas the Chromebook, there's the Google has a blog where they say, oh yeah, this does this and this and this and this. Every once in a while they will say something like improve security, but that's not the rule.
Yeah.
Right. So
how does it improve the security?
Right.
It
right.
will tell you exactly.
Right. And sometimes what they're doing, of course, is that can't be right. What they're doing, of course, is protecting a stupid update, a stupid thing they did. And I get that, but. And I've talked to a lot of people who are very interested in Chromebooks because they're just tired of the nonsense, no matter what operating system they're running.
That's another one of your stories.
It is. It's my second story. We'll talk about that later. But, the Chromebook does an update. You get a little indicator in the corner that says you've got an update. So when you want to reboot, go ahead. But you get the choice. Windows 10 will say, you have an update. We'll reboot when you're not busy, or you can reboot now.
I was at a customer this week, and they apparently haven't rebooted their Windows server in ages, which is normal. But there were 164 updates waiting.
Yeah.
That needed to be rebooted.
That's overnight.
Yeah.
Particularly on a Windows box.
I said, no, I'll do it later.
Yeah. And the updates are very slow on Windows. I don't know why that is, but they are, and it is what it is. Updating is important. And I do understand, for example, my Linux box and my Chromebook download the updates and prep them in the background. But so you're working away, whatever, and then you get the little notice that says you got updates. So you can now decide to install them or not install them. One of the nice things about Linux, of course, is that unless it's an update to the kernel itself, you don't have to reboot. So, for example, this morning I had a couple of updates to some background programs that I wasn't running at the moment. So while I was on the web updating Ask Nick news and a couple of other things, this was running around in the background doing its thing. And I didn't even notice it, and it was fine, and then everything was great. But it was very unobtrusive and just worked fine. Chromebooks are different because of the way they work, because of the security that they have. You do have to reboot, but you do it on your own time. Windows, Macs are the same, right? They'll update in the background, or they'll download it.
They'll download it and then tell you it needs to restart, and you can say restart later if you want to.
Right.
And later becomes never.
Yeah, later should never become never. We really need to, and that's the big lesson to take here. Later should never become never. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Carl, all the way from Pottstown, PA, on the line. Hiya, Carl. How's it going down there?
Fine. How you doing today?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
I have a printer that won't work. It's a combination printer-scanner. Connects with a USB cable to the computer. When I scan, it works fine. There's no problem at all. If I tell it to print a test page, it'll print a test page. So the printer itself is working as far as the mechanics are concerned.
Yep.
But when I try to print something from, let's say, an internet screen, I want to print out a page, for example, like your website,
right.
It just sits there. It won't print at all. I've gone through everything I could think of, including Device Manager, which I find under IEEE 1284.4, compatible printer. When I click on the general tab, it says the driver's up to date. When I click on the next tab, the drivers tab, it says the device is working properly. It also says the best driver software for your device is already installed. And I don't quite know what to do, where to go next.
Simple question, but open the print queue and make sure it's not paused.
Well,
you may find all your jobs there waiting.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I could click on see what's printing. Okay, so I clicked on that. And there are six documents listed. I try to print all six of these, and one of them under the status column says printing, and it has said printing for the last 2 hours, but it hasn't printed anything.
Plus, your mic is off.
I'd flush them all out.
No. Here's your problem. IEEE 1284,
yeah,
is bidirectional parallel communication. It's
right.
Not USB.
Really?
So. If it says it's an IEEE 1284 connector and it's connecting, if you can see where it's connecting, it may think it's connecting to a Centronics port, the DB25 connector.
Well, that sounds logical. The only thing I could find wrong with that logic is I've had this printer hooked up exactly the same way into a USB port for the past 2 years, and it only stopped working 2 days ago.
What changed?
That's a good question. Yeah. That's
Thank
what I'm
you.
Trying to figure out.
An update could have done
Maybe
it.
Maybe the printer choked, yeah. Try pausing. Pause and restart the queue. Delete the print queue completely and re-add it.
Right.
Actually, delete the print queue, reboot, and Windows should auto-detect it and add it properly.
Right. If you delete the printer entirely, yeah, well, empty the print queue, like Dave said,
mm-hmm.
then... delete the entire printer, like Steve said. Unplug it, delete it, reboot, plug it back in, and let Windows find it again, and see if it brings up a different port. Because what it sounds like is that it was running fine, and then somewhere along the line, it thought, you know what, this really should be connected to a Centronics port. So I'll look for it there. You may actually have a Centronics port on your computer. the old parallel 25-pin parallel connector. But it thinks it's supposed to be connected there. That's the thing that stands out to me, the fact that it says it's an IEEE 1284 printer.
And even with that, though, the scanner portion still works. Would the scanner portion still work if that were true?
Well, go look at the scanner driver and see if it's pointing at a different port, like let's say, a USB port.
Okay.
Right? So they're really two separate drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of them may be working correctly, and the other one may not.
Okay, I see.
And that makes sense?
Yeah, that does. I'll give
scary
that
enough it did.
It's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah. And we've been doing this for 25 years?
And suddenly we made sense all of a sudden, yeah. I used to love the Centronics port. It was easy to plug in. It had those little ears that would tighten it down easily and simply. Great port. Very hard to screw up. Very hard to get wrong. Very hard to break. That's why they stopped using them.
Yeah.
The problem we ran into on the Mac side is it used the same DB25 connector that SCSI did on the computer.
Right, and it's Apple that screwed everything up for everybody.
Yeah. And so we would see people would plug their parallel printer into the SCSI port because the plug fit.
Right. Well, that's the problem with the standard for SCSI.
Yeah.
It was bad.
They picked a common connector.
Right. All right. Anyway, did that make sense?
Yeah, it did. The only other thing I was wondering about is normally when the printer doesn't work, up until this point, I've had the printer for 2 years, but up until this point, whenever the printer didn't work, I'd get an error message on the screen. At this point, it doesn't seem like the printer is communicating with the computer to tell it anything's wrong, because there are absolutely no error messages at all. It just doesn't print, and everything looks fine on the screen.
It thinks it's
no error messages.
Right. Yeah. Right. It thinks it's printing because it's looking for messages coming back from the parallel port.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to get a message from the parallel port, so nothing's wrong.
I see.
See that, so once it's going to the wrong port, all bets are off. I will almost guarantee that had you looked at this prior to 2 weeks ago, it would have said USB connected to a USB port. Right? So instead of an IEEE port. And so somewhere along the line, some update somewhere, something, cosmic rays, I don't know what it was, made your machine think it should be connected to an IEEE 1284 port. The Centronics parallel port. So what you need to do, like we said, is empty the print queue, because you don't care about those documents anymore. Empty the print queue, then and completely remove the printer, use Device Manager to completely remove the whole thing from the system, completely. Unplug it first. To completely remove it from memory, reboot the machine, and let it refind it.
Could I use Revo Uninstaller to install the drivers?
Maybe.
What brand printer is it?
It's an HP.
HP, and is it the only one you have?
Yes.
Okay. So we have seen problems if you have two different HP printers, the drivers will fight each other.
Right. But I personally wouldn't do Revo Uninstaller. I would personally remove it from the system entirely.
And to do that, you have to get into Device Manager?
Yeah. So open up Device Manager, find the printer, remove it.
You can delete it from the printers and...
Oh, yeah, that's
now,
true.
From the printer control panel.
Right, from the printer control panel, you can just right-click on it and say remove printer or delete or whichever way it comes up these days.
Okay, and I do have the original disk that came with the printer, so I could put that disk in and then start from scratch, right?
No, don't use that disk. It's old. Go to the HP website and download the current driver.
Okay.
Right, in fact, do that first. Go to the HP website, find the exact driver for your machine, not a close one, maybe it's one letter off or a couple of numbers off. No, it's the exact one for your printer. And then have that one ready. And then if it's zipped, unzip it. And then when the thing comes up, it'll say, do you want to find the driver on your machine or whatever? Point it to it. You're on your way. Go.
Oh, that'll be interesting trying to find the driver on the HP site, because the last time I called the live technical help at HP, which was about a couple of months ago, and asked for technical information about this printer, the only thing they would say to me is, sorry, we don't support that anymore. We can't tell you anything.
Well, HP's been pretty good about leaving old drivers on their website. What model number is it?
HP 2400.
Yeah. 2400 series, probably. Does it have two more numbers in it?
Yeah, it does. Let me see if I can find them on here.
That can be part of the problem. You know, yeah. The 2420 driver is different from the 2430 driver.
Yeah, they're right. Due to generic
driver. You're right.
Driver.
It's an F2480, HP DeskJet F2480.
Yeah, see,
so just Google, you know, Google that, and first link is HP support printer drivers.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'll lead you to the correct driver. Download that, make sure you've got it handy, and it should work.
Okay, I'll go ahead and do that. Thank
you
very
might,
much.
Well, hold on. You might want to also delete the, in fact, you should also delete the scanner from the, you know, when you go to delete the printer,
mm-hmm.
You'll see another section for scanners. Delete that as well. You don't want half a set of drivers in there.
Right. That's a good point. Thanks.
Yeah. All right.
And then when you do download the driver, make sure you get Windows 7, 8, 8.1, you know, whatever specific version of Windows you're running.
Right.
But they even make a Windows 10 version for this printer. That's crazy.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
How can they not support it if they just brought out a Windows 10 driver for it?
I don't know. That is crazy.
All right.
Well, the phone guy doesn't support it. The internet does. Yeah.
Wait a minute. In our business, you ask why?
Yeah, that's why I just bought a Brother printer. I don't.
We really like the Brother printers. They're we find they're just as good as HP. They're a little cheaper, and the consumables are cheaper.
Yeah.
And Brother was doing fax machines, you know, since the 30s, 40s.
I suspect
and it was a printer, and someone said, "Hey, let's put a USB port on it."
The first printer I ever had was a Brother printer, and it ran. You couldn't kill it with a baseball bat. All right, thanks, Carl.
Okay, good luck. Thanks. Take care. Bye bye.
You too. Bye bye.
You turned your mic off.
Did I?
Yeah.
That was stupid. Dave,
wrong button.
Dave, on the other hand.
Dave had to turn a button off. You should have left your button on.
But Dave turned my button back on because
yep.
Dave's on top of this.
Dave
He's
is here.
He's a man in control of the thing. And he just, I'm
just
sure somewhere in the back
it.
Of his head
just
he said something rude.
It.
But he was polite enough not to say it out loud and turned my mic back on. So that was all right. He was very nice to do that for me. All right, we got time. I'll read this news story.
Yeah, go for it.
As school districts across the country increasingly invest in technology for their students, the volume of personal computers in the classroom is surging. And it is Chromebooks, notebook computers that run Google's Chrome operating system, an upstart in a sector dominated by Apple and Microsoft that is largely responsible for the growth trend in schools. Last year, the market for desktop, laptop, tablets, and two-in-one computers shipped to kindergarten through 12th grade schools and institutions of higher education in the United States amounted to $7 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars. In its lineup of iPads, MacBooks, and other high-priced products, Apple reaped the greatest revenue in the sector last year, accounting for nearly half the total dollars spent. But in terms of sheer number of devices sold, Microsoft remained in the lead. But the Chromebook category is fast gaining traction in the U.S. Last year, about 3.9 million Chromebooks were shipped in the education sector, an increase in unit sales of more than 310% compared with the previous year. That's right. A 310% increase year over year. There isn't a business in America that wouldn't kill in public for those numbers.
Yep.
By contrast, iPad unit sales for education fell last year to 2.7 million devices compared to 2.9 million in 2013. Even if Microsoft is number one in volume and Apple is number one in revenue, from the growth perspective, nobody can beat Chromebooks, said Rajani Singh, a senior research analyst at IDC, who tracks the personal computer market. In the first half of this year, she said, roughly 2.4 million Chromebooks shipped to schools, compared with about 2.2 million Windows-based desktops and notebook computers. That's very close competition between Windows and Chromebook, Ms. Singh said. It's becoming more competitive. Use of Chromebooks is growing fast, said Rajin Sheth, a Google Chromebook executive. It's great to see overall market for these kinds of devices growing as a result. So, what do you think of Chromebooks? And are you thinking of buying one for your returning school student? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, they do most of what people want anyway. Right. You know, web and mail and, you know, now the picture editor, the video editor, the, all that stuff you can do online. And we've also been seeing a lot of schools are moving to Google Docs instead of paying a fortune for Microsoft licenses.
Google Docs are free yep. for students, so a lot of them are doing that. And you can share documents. Students can work on documents simultaneously, even if they're not in the same place. You can share them with your faculty once they're done. I mean, it's just it's ridiculously easy to use, and there's just an amazing amount of stuff the average person can do. Now, that said, if you're in a program where you have to have Visual Basic, well, then you're going to buy a Windows machine. If you're in a class where you have to have Photoshop, you're probably going to buy a Mac.
Yeah.
But most people don't need that stuff. And particularly students, they need access to the web. They need word processing and spreadsheets. Maybe they need slides.
A lot of kids are doing presentations now.
Yeah.
We see it all the time.
Yeah, they do slides. Maybe it's the other way around. They need word processing and slides, and maybe they need
a spreadsheet.
So I teach as an adjunct at RIT, and I've got a number of kids who are using Chromebooks specifically. And every year I get a couple of students who email me and say, I have a Chromebook. Is that going to be a problem for this class? And unless I'm actually teaching Visual Basic, like I said, no, it's not going to be a problem. Everything we need you to do for this course, you can do here. And that means instead of a $600 or $1,200 computer, they can get away with a $200 computer, particularly when they're young and their eyes are good and they can get that 11-inch model.
And if they drop it and break it, it's not as big a dent in the wallet.
You know, one of my daughter's friends in college had her MacBook stolen, and she couldn't afford to replace it, nor could her parents.
We may have to do it this way for...
and so she was kind of done until I suggested get a Chromebook. It's only a couple hundred bucks.
And when you buy the computer, check your homeowner's insurance, because many times it can be covered. But sometimes the deductible is the whole cost of the computer.
Exactly.
So check that insurance and see what happens.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. It's 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites and member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at whatever it is, 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Cecilia from Rochester, New York, on the line.
Hi, it's me.
Hi. Are you sick and tired of the Simon and Garfunkel song?
Yeah, not really. I always liked it.
There you go. What can we do to help you today, Cecilia?
Well, I have an issue with my, I use Microsoft Office and the Outlook. Right now I have Outlook 360, well, Outlook 2013, I guess. I have Office 365.
Yeah.
And I have a Roadrunner email account.
Yeah.
And I'm having problems staying connected to the server. I have an IMAP account set up, and this has been going on for the past few months. It's very intermittent. I keep getting error messages that it can't synchronize the folders. It can't connect to the server. It was unexpectedly terminated by the server. And I've called Time Warner. They say it's not them. I call Microsoft. They say it's not Office. But, you know, it's funny because when this happens, I can get on the internet, but it's just the email connection with, you know, and I know I have the ports, everything set up right.
Do you have a phone or a tablet or other computing device you check your mail on too?
Yes, and
that's
the same problem on that one.
Yeah, yes, because both your devices are checking for mail at the same time, and Roadrunner doesn't like that.
Well, so...
We see that problem a lot.
Well, and it's also
usually you get server connection refused in use by another host or something like that.
And when you do get mail on both of them, do you sometimes find mail on one that's not on the other?
I haven't noticed that.
Okay.
So they're both set up for IMAP.
Then they're both set up for IMAP, so that's okay. Honestly, just taking a look through this, I see this a lot. There are a lot of people complaining about the same thing. They're saying things like, oh, I've got several email accounts. The only one I have trouble with is Roadrunner. So I have to assume at this point that the problem is a Roadrunner problem.
Okay. Because it's weird because I can't be the internet, right? Because, I mean, I can get on the internet. It's just the email.
Right.
And even when I go to the Roadrunner webmail, it's not working right.
One thing I might suggest to do.
Oh, the webmail doesn't work either?
Did you say the webmail doesn't work?
That's definitely a Roadrunner problem.
Yeah, the last few times, for a while I thought it was working, but then I noticed when I was sending things, it really wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
so
that's definitely a problem with Roadrunner.
But finding the right person at Roadrunner to let them know is going to be impossible.
Let me suggest two things. One thing you could do is, and I don't know where to set this up in Office 365 because I've not tried it, is relax how often you check for mail.
Okay.
There should be a setting somewhere that says, you know, check for mail every minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah,
minutes.
Right. Okay.
Make it less, you know,
half an hour, something along
that line. And just see if that mitigates the problem.
Okay,
on both your devices.
Right, on everything, all three of them. The Live 365 and on your tablet.
Okay, I can try that.
The second thing I might suggest is set up a different email account, whether you set it up on Exchange or on Gmail or something else, and slowly transition people to that. Put a little signature at the bottom of your Roadrunner email that says, please use this other account from now on.
We thought, you know, that's what I keep saying, because I do have a Gmail account I use occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
But my husband and I, we're kind of old school, you know. We've had Outlook since the beginning of time.
Well, you can still use Outlook. You're just using the Outlook program to access your Gmail.
Right.
But I have to change the email address, though, right?
You do have to change your email address. But and here's another reason to do that. And I suggest this to everybody: if you use your internet service provider's email,
yes.
If you ever change your internet service provider, you lose all your email.
Right.
So
okay.
If you use a third party like Gmail,
uh-huh.
or like Office, or you know whatever. That's not connected to an internet service provider. So that means not Frontier, not Roadrunner, whatever. That way, if you decide, if you move, for example, and Roadrunner's not available where you go, or you decide you don't want Roadrunner, you want Greenlight, or you want Frontier, then you don't have to worry about, oh, I don't have my mail anymore, what do I do? I have to figure out how to move it all, blah, blah, blah.
You've already done that.
And now I've got to tell all my people about moving my email address. Well, here, because you still have Roadrunner, you can do it very gradually.
I see. So if I was to go to Gmail, you said I could still use the Microsoft Office?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Outlook will pick up any standard POP or IMAP service as well as Microsoft's own Outlook.com.
Right, so you can...
Microsoft calls everything Outlook and confuses us all.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. The other thing is, does it pay to try doing the POP server again?
No.
What
the POP server does is download the mail to the computer. So, and that's why I asked if you have some mail on one device but not on another.
Okay.
Because that way, let's say your tablet gets there first... It downloads the mail and erases it from the server. So when you go with your computer, your desktop, there's no mail.
Yeah, okay. Okay, because when I had the POP set up, like last year, early spring, I didn't have any problems.
Yeah.
Right, but then you cannot synchronize mail between your devices.
Yeah, I know, and that's why we
And that's the biggest problem that people like, yeah.
Yeah,
And you are using mail.twc.com as your server address?
Yes, yeah, and I checked with them, you know, I got everything set up right, but... you know, they didn't want to say it was their fault. Because
yeah,
at the time when I talked to them, I thought webmail was working. So, but now I realize it's not.
Right. And honestly, webmail is purely a TWC problem, a Time Warner problem.
Yeah, okay.
There's no,
and they've always had a crappy webmail service anyway.
Well,
they do.
Yeah. So my suggestion is pick another service. Like I've said many times, I'm partial to Gmail.
Yeah.
But you've already got a Gmail address, so why not use it? And just start telling all of your friends, please use the new Gmail address. Please change your address book. Then really they only have to change it once.
Yeah.
Right. And if you start using the Gmail account to send mail, and then every once in a while check your Time Warner account using the webmail thing, then you can catch the few stragglers, and semi-painlessly over time, you'll transition everybody to your new Gmail address, and then no matter where you go, what ISP you use, whatever, Office 365 will be able to pick up your mail from Gmail, no problem.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try that then. First I'll change the email time, to check
right.
it and see. But like I said, Saturday and Sundays, it works fine.
Well, and that's why I suggest what happens is, people think they're important, so they check their email once a minute.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge load on a server when you've got as many customers as Time Warner does.
Oh, okay.
And so the server gets bogged down. And,
okay.
And you're just... And then the problem is Office 365 has a timeout that's shorter than how long you're waiting.
Oh.
So it comes back and says, well, it didn't answer me in X amount of minutes, so it must be broken. I give up.
Okay. All right, because I think I put the timeout at 10 minutes.
Yeah, but it may well be longer because everybody else has their checks every minute.
I
so
see.
If you only check every half hour, every
okay.
hour... You may find that you get through a little better, but really the actual solution is to change your email address.
Change it. I was afraid of that. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Well, we can do it.
I've had my Roadrunner account, 15 years now? Have they been in town?
Yep.
I was one of their charter members.
Yep.
Well, actually, we at Comcast, we lived out in Colorado, and I loved the Comcast webmail. That was a lot nicer than the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
But since we've been back to Rochester now for 8 years, we've had Roadrunner. So, okay. Well, thank you very much for all your help, and I'll try those two suggestions.
Thank you, Cecilia. Good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Great. Now I got the song running through my head now. The Simon and Garfunkel song.
Yeah.
But for the rest of you, we've suggested that for a while. And no disrespect to any of the internet service providers in town. They all provide great service and do us a great thing. But the reality is that with people being so mobile and with life the way it is now, you may change your internet service provider several times in your lifetime. So if you are using a third-party product like Gmail or like Microsoft Office or like Apple Mail or just whichever one makes you happy, once you're established at that address with people, it doesn't matter what you do with your ISP. Your email address will always remain whatever at Gmail or whatever at Apple or whatever. So my suggestion is to do that. And accounts for all of these. Well, I don't know if Apple's still free.
Yeah,
okay,
it is.
They're all still free.
It's tricky to set up a free email account though, because they want you to use someone else's email.
Right, right, right. But grab a Gmail account. It's literally half a minute, to set up an account and grab an email address, and then you're done, and you can use it. Yay! Everything suddenly works.
Except it doesn't look like it's in HD yet. I'll worry about that later.
Yeah. Well, it looks like the YouTube channel is actually working now.
Well, the audio's been running.
Do you know what you did?
I deleted the driver for those other camera apps I've been testing.
So you were right. It was the other camera apps that got in the way. You can't have too many drivers for a product in a system. So at any rate, the basic idea here is grab that address at Gmail or Apple Mail or Office, and use that. It's a third party, non-denominational email address.
Sorry, I was just joking with Nick about this. That anytime any new service opens, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and there's some new service, grab your name at that service as soon as you can. You may never want to use it, but if you do decide to use it, and then you've got to be, you know, John Smith 4289685.
Right.
In order to get a unique name.
Right. Right. So you should grab them as early as possible. I have someone who when my daughter was born, I took out AmeliaRose.com, and there's a person who emails me semi-regularly and asks if they can buy it. And I don't want to sell it. It's the only AmeliaRose.com there will ever be on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And although Amelia doesn't use it now, it's for her.
She just might someday.
And she just might someday.
Google's got that commercial where they start out with the baby. They make an email address for them and then email the baby's address all through toddler, you know, pictures. And we did this today. So when the kid finally starts using email, he's got all this history there.
Yeah, it's
Google never
cool.
deletes mail.
Google never deletes mail.
Yeah.
Even when you want it to, it just archives it. It'll still be there under all mail.
It'll be there.
Once it's on the internet, it's there permanently.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, those are just those. And so any newlyweds listening, when you have your baby, get their email, or you know, get their IP, their
email
domain name, or find a domain name that's free, and then name your kid that.
And set up the email address too.
The freakiest thing happened to me once. I was at a customer site and we were talking about this. And so, I went to StephenRay.com and I said, this domain for sale. At home later that night, I got an email saying, would you like to buy StephenRay.com?
Wow.
How did it know?
Yeah.
How do it know?
So it probably sent it. Well, see, one of the problems is there's a
you sent yourself an email.
Yeah. There's a Scottish actor, Stephen Ray.
Very good Scottish actor, by the way.
And he's always the buddy of the leading man.
Right. Or the girlfriend.
People send me movie posters when in fact, surely just, I forget what the movie is, but I'm in a new movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so... A lot of celebrities want to get their own website with their name.
Right.
So they might have thought it was just him.
Right, exactly. They found your name somewhere.
They found my address. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get an email from, oh, thank you for coming to our opening last week. You know, we love your work. And sometimes I want to write back, you know, F you, jerks. But I usually say, no, it wasn't me.
Yeah, I used to be pretty much the only Nick Francesco on the internet. Now there's DJ Nick Francesco, who's some small child somewhere. I'm sure he's very, very good, but I should listen to his music, see if I actually like it. He's starting to pop up here and there. All right, that music tells me that you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. Luckily, you get the opportunity to do it again because you're not that bright, and we're going to give you a second chance at it. So we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back on the other side of that for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We will be bringing you Dave Enright. We will be bringing you Steve Ray. We will be bringing you Nick Francesco. We will be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. We'll be bringing you your phone calls with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call. It's actually fairly easy. You just dial 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Alternately, if you're outside the 585 area code, you can give us a call at 1-800-790-0415. And we will both be both honored and delighted to speak to you live on the air and answer your computer questions, just like we're going to do for Paul. from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
Question. I've asked you guys some questions about saving web pages in the past, and they're very helpful. I want to kick it up a notch. I want to save websites. I'm interested in various collectibles, and lots of individual collectors put up web pages. And over the past 10 years or so, three or four of them have disappeared, and the interesting information that was on there is no longer available. And I was searching for that, and I see something called offline browsing, which seems to offer a feature of saving a website. And I would like to know whether you have any recommendations on that. And there's something about saving link depth. In other words, it'll click a link, and I'm wondering how that grows.
Are you running Mac or Windows?
Windows,
because there's a really good one for Mac I use called Site Sucker. It just sucks the whole site down.
Oh, right, okay. and there's under Linux, which probably would also work on the Mac, you can just use wget and ask for the whole site.
Uh-huh. Safari even has a save as. I don't know. Yeah, save as. You can save the website directly in Safari.
Right, but
not for Windows.
You save the web page. I don't know if it saves the whole site.
Right. Yeah, you can do both. You can do a web archive.
Oh, that's nice. But here's let's just start with something very simple. For all the sites you haven't already saved, if you go to archive.org.
Yes.
It's the Internet Archive, and if you look across the black bar at the top on the far right, on the far left, the other right, is a little icon. If you roll over, it says web.
Yes.
And if you click it, it brings up something called the Wayback Machine. And you type in a URL, and it brings you up the history of that website.
Okay.
And you can go back. It's spotty. It's not every day. Okay?
Right, right.
But you can go back through and see what was there before. Now, sometimes you don't get the pictures.
Yeah, in my case, the pictures are almost everything. Yep.
Right. No, I do understand that. Yeah. So what you really want is a...
There is a wget for Windows.
That would work. But there are site suckers for Windows. There's one called Page Sucker. Softronic makes one called Site Sucker.
No, Softronic is a download parking site.
Yeah.
And that usually doesn't get you what you want.
Uh-huh.
What was the one that you said you found?
Oh, I forget what it was. It was download something. There seemed to be quite a few of them offered. It was just whether I was particularly interested in the link depth part of it.
Yeah. The one I used to use all the time was called HT Track.
HT Track.
And it's at httrack.com. So
right.
I don't remember the depth. I think you get to set that. I think right on the main
page. Yeah, you can pick one or two links deep. Yeah, I'm just wondering whether it clicks off to something like Amazon. What happens? You know,
there's a plugin for Firefox, the Mozilla Archive.
Okay, that's interesting. Firefox.
Right, but it does seem to have a little bit of everything. You can do it with multiple connections so that it downloads faster, and whatever limits you want to put on the amount of your system. It'll accept links to places, and you can exclude links to certain things. So
does it give you an idea of how long this is going to take, or how big the website is before it does it, or you just turn it on at midnight and come back in the morning?
Well, that's one of the reasons that they give you multiple connections, how many connections you want to make. It'll tell you certainly the time it's spent.
Right.
And you get a real nice bar graph of each of your connections, how much is being done. But the problem with that, of course, is that if you've elected to pick up pictures, it doesn't know how big each of those pictures is until it starts to download it.
Oh, okay.
And if you elect to go off-site, for example, a lot of sites have a third place where they actually pick up their pictures.
Okay, these are like individual collectors, so they're supplying all the content pretty much.
Right. So
and it would probably download all the ads, too.
Well, right.
Oh. Okay.
But it won't necessarily, there's not, it's not magic.
Okay.
Right? You're going to get the page exactly as it looked.
Say you come back in 6 months, is there the equivalent of an incremental upgrade to?
I don't know that much about HT Track. So I don't know that off the top of my head. But if you go to the website, you can browse the documentation.
Okay, very
good. And that will tell you pretty much everything. Most of them do have something sort of like that.
Okay. But it's a reasonable thing, and it'll be a couple of hours or...
Yeah, it shouldn't be... It also depends on how fast your internet connection is.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen no place that actually gives an average of what a website... what size a website is. I've seen an average for a web page, but not a site.
Right, and so you multiply that page by the number of pages in the site, really, is how that works.
Okay.
And because every site is a different number of pages.
Right, sure.
I mean, if you were to download the Security Tango, it's only a few pages. Ask Nick is a dozen pages. Soundbites is hundreds of pages. So they can't give you an average, you know?
Okay.
But I would suggest also that you be careful with this. If you do not have the right to archive or copy that information, it is illegal to do so without the permission of the people who own the site.
Oh, okay.
You just need to know that. That's if it's your sites you're backing up, HTTrack is great for that. If it's a public domain site, HTTrack is great for that. Beyond those two things, you must have permission from the copyright holders.
Oh, okay.
To make a copy of their site.
But they didn't mention anything about that. They're just offline browsing. If you want to look at a website offline, you just use this and go down with it.
Well, no, I get that, but the I'm just telling you what the reality is. If somebody sees that you're doing that and objects, you know, they can look at their logs and see who downloaded what from their site. And if they see HT Tracker and they object to that, they will make contact with you and be angry. So you just need to be aware that that's a possibility.
Sure. Okay. You got time for another question?
Quickly.
Cookies. I was doing my super anti-spyware thing, and it always kick up tracking cookies, maybe 35 or 50 over a week. All of a sudden, I started listening to TuneIn radio, and over a week, I got 400.
Yeah.
I skipped it for 2 weeks, and it was 1,400. And they all seem to be, I play the radio on Firefox, and the cookies seem to be led by what looks like a tracking company, .com, and then roaming Mozilla thing. Is that TuneIn selling it to like 300 companies?
Likely so. TuneIn Radio is actually owned by Clear Channel.
Okay.
And they're
iHeart Company now, isn't it?
It's iHeart Company, exactly.
Well, it's funny because I used to play iHeart Radio, and I did a test where I got rid of all my cookies, ran just iHeart Radio, came up with 7. I got rid of those, ran the iTunes thing, and came up with 112 in 2 minutes.
It's very likely that each of the songs is putting its own cookie on. So
it's a talk radio.
Then it's each show is certainly putting on
and
for
each commercial that it plays.
Yeah,
there is a program called Ghostery that you can install into your browser, and it will show you what tracking sites are being used on that web page and allow you to block them.
Okay, and block them. Okay.
Yeah, and it's an add-in for your browser.
Okay, Ghostery.
Ghostery,
yeah.
Trying to find a nice about screen to
Ghostery.
Okay, and things will work even though those cookies are rejected.
Generally speaking, what you might get once in a while is a thing saying that cookies are not being accepted, and if they're really angry about it, they'll say you have to. Cookies.
Okay.
But very few sites do that.
Is deleting the cookies of any use? Because if you go back to the same website, can't they tie it up with the previous day because they know what computer this is coming from? Or
generally, cookies are innocuous.
Generally.
A lot of times it's advertising cookies, and it remembers what ad it showed you. It remembers what ad you clicked on, and so it tries to show you relevant ads. That was that was the initial point of cookies.
Right.
But it's gone way beyond that, and now it's more the tracking issue.
Right.
They can track you by the cookies that are set. because there are so many big tracking or advertising companies. In fact, I just read, I gotta find it again. Google has a service because they own DoubleClick and most of the big tracking companies. If you don't want to see ads, you can give Google $2 a month.
Yep.
because the ad pays for the website.
Right, right.
And then you get a report of how much of your money went to what ad company, because if too many people block ads, then the website's going to have to find some other way to make money.
Right.
So if you just pay the ad company to not show you an ad,
yep.
And for a pound, I won't mess up this sketch.
But it's funny, the TuneIn Radio doesn't show me any ads. I just click on the cat, and
a lot of cookies are fairly innocuous. They just want to know who's, you know, using their site. It's mostly anonymous.
Yeah.
So they'll just know, you know, X percentage of the people who listen come back.
Yeah. But it seemed that it had nothing to do with TuneIn, because there was like 100 of them in 2 minutes. So I don't think.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with TuneIn. They were all going to these .com places that seemed like tracking places.
Well, and often enough, people will pay to allow their cookies on somebody else's app.
Especially
on radio shows and podcasts,
right.
That they want to know how many people are listening so they can determine what to charge for the ads. And they want to know how many people are listening to determine if they should keep doing the show.
Okay, right.
And so that's right. That tracking is supposedly innocuous.
Okay.
But right. But a lot of people just don't like it.
Yeah, I was just surprised by getting 1,400 of them in 2 weeks. All of a sudden, I said, "What's going on?"
Right.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you very much,
John. Right, thanks.
Right up. Bye bye.
And also, as a personal plea, when you go to AskNick.com or Soundbites.org or SecurityTango.com, please turn off your ad blockers.
I've been clicking on it for you.
Thanks. The big thing, of course, is. Much of the internet is run on ads, you know, and as long as they aren't the obnoxious, you know, automatically play a video or
take you to another site and then don't let you out of it.
Right.
I hate those.
They don't bother me so much. And like I said, a lot of the internet is run on ad revenue right now. And the more people who block, there's a whole thing going on with that. The more people who block, the more likely it is that people will start charging to access their websites. Because right now you can get a not a decent amount of money, but a little change from passive Google ads, right? Or whatever ad network you want to be part of. And Google really is the most unobtrusive of all of them so far.
Because so many websites these days are hosted by a guy,
right.
or a girl, and you know it's two or three people, you know, writing stuff you want to read,
right?
And the only way they can make money is with the advertising on their website,
right? Ask Nick is an example of that. I used to charge people to come to my website. Now it's free, but there are ads on it, and if you block the ads, then I don't make my penny or two. From a day or whatever I'm getting. But, you know, I would like to continue to get that money. So, if you are going to ask, and you should be going to ask Nick at least several times a day to look at the news, I would appreciate it if you would not run an ad blocker. And you're seeing now a lot of sites that come up with a graphic in the ad space and say, I see you're using an ad blocker.
Mm-hmm.
We would very much appreciate it if you would turn that off for this site.
In fact, AdBlock Plus, which is one of the most popular ad blockers, got in trouble because they will allow some companies to pay to be not blocked. But they have to make sure, you know, claim it's not an obtrusive ad or not an offensive ad.
Right. I use uBlock Origin or MicroBlock Origin, whichever way they want to pronounce that. And so far, it's both lighter and equal to, if not better than, AdBlock Plus. And, of course, I turn it off for Ask Nick and Soundbites, just so you know. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-04.
Somebody was just calling, but one thing folks have to understand. Oh, he's calling back. Must have realized I'm on the air. I can't be talking on the air and answering the phone.
Right.
I'm good, but not that good.
Right. He's not that good. And so I can do that while he's on the phone. He may not have heard me. The big thing is this studio is really set up for jazz and not for a call-in show. And they've been Jazz 90.1, very nice to give us a home. But until you folks fork over an additional $100,000 above and beyond everything else that we need, we'll have an issue with that. All right. And so we have to pick up the phone. We have to do a bunch of stuff. And then if Dave is on the line, we're across the room. It's a very small room. We could probably jump over the table and grab it. But at any rate, our next caller is Rich.
I don't think I could.
No, both of you would wind up hurting yourselves.
Yeah. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. Fairly simple question, considering some of the ones I've been hearing.
Always simple, Rich. It's the answers that are hard.
Thank you. I bought an Asus cute little laptop computer transformer where the top comes off and you have a tablet.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not the issue so much as is I downloaded Windows 10. I only have two apps on the desktop, I guess. Is that the right term? I've
sure.
got the waste basket up there, and I have Google. And I use AOL, and I go to AOL, and I look up what I want to look up, my email, et cetera. And when I close it, the app for AOL, or the shortcut, I guess you call it, is not on the screen. How do you go into cyberspace and put an app on your screen, a shortcut representing that site that you use a lot?
I know on the Mac, you open the site and drag the address to the desktop.
Right, and that should do it. That should do it on pretty much anything.
Drag the...
In the address bar of your web browser.
Where it says www.aol.com.
Right.
Drag that to your desktop. Now, if you've increased the size of your browser so it takes up the whole window, you have to make it a little smaller so that you can see some of your desktop behind it.
And that's all you do? It's that simple.
Yeah, that should do it. It does it on every... I haven't tried it on Windows 10 yet, and I just didn't think of that. I have not tried that on Windows 10 yet. What browser do you use?
Firefox.
If it's like Windows 8, where you go down in the bottom left-hand corner, and you click on that other button, and it shows you the alphabetical listings of all the programs and things like that.
Yes.
I believe if you write,
He doesn't want to put a program. He wants to put a website URL.
Oh, the URL, not the actual program?
Yeah, not a program. He doesn't want... Chrome's already on the desktop.
Right.
What he wants is AOL.com.
Yep. Or any site that I might have gone to.
Right. Okay.
So once I'm at the site, I just drag from the browser down to an open space on the desktop.
Yeah, give it a try. That should work.
And you said you're using Firefox?
Yes.
I'll post a link from the Firefox help pages.
Oh, that is really easy. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Bye.
I admit I haven't tried that on Windows 10 yet. It's one of the many thousands of things I haven't tried on Windows 10 yet. There's a lot. There's a lot to do. The little things like this. There's a lot to do. Are they giving you essentially the same advice or a different advice?
Yeah, there's also a create shortcut button in right-click on the start menu, create shortcut, and then you can type in the address yourself.
Yeah.
But that's annoying.
That's annoying. You want to be able to do it real easy just by dragging and dropping.
Yeah.
That's the easy way to do it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Max from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Max. What's up?
Hi, guys. I bought one of those outdoor cameras to see what wildlife goes through my yard.
Oh, sure.
And there's an SD card that you use with it, and nowhere on the box does it say that I need to use a Microsoft operating system. And in the instructions, it says that's what I have to have. And, of course, I have a Mac. So I can't use that SD card after it's taken some pictures. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
No?
The cameras generally are standalone with that SD card. It can record to the SD card. Or you can run software on your computer that reads the camera. And you can watch a live camera view.
If you've got a wireless camera.
Yeah. Which is generally the IP address of the camera.
Right.
So you take that SD card and put it in your Mac, it will show up on the desktop. You should be able to open that card and see the video that's saved on it.
Oh, even though it says I need to use a Microsoft OS?
Well, that's for the program they provided. You can use your own program. Probably the QuickTime player.
Say that again, the QuickTime player?
Yeah, the QuickTime player is built into the Mac, and it's designed to play movie files of all sorts.
Oh, okay, so
if there's still pictures, you'll be able to open them up, click on a picture, it opens up the preview program.
Preview, the preview shows.
So it shouldn't be a problem. What they're saying is that the SD card uses a Windows format. But Max will read that, and in fact, if you want to, it'll also write to it. So you could add pictures to that SD card, or you could delete pictures from the SD card. So there's no worries about putting it in a Mac. It's just that the SD card format is a Windows-type format.
Okay.
And it may be that they're using Windows Media Video, which I doubt. They're probably using H.264.
Are you taking movies or just pictures?
Just pictures.
Probably JPEG. Yeah.
Yeah, so don't worry about it. It should go right into your machine and read. The only time it wouldn't read is if it's been damaged.
Okay. Do you have time for another one, please?
Go quickly, go.
A dash cam. Could you give me a recommendation for a good camera? Dash cam.
I have on my list to look into dash cams myself, not that I'm heading to Russia anytime soon. So I don't have an immediate idea of what Garmin I know makes one. And in fact, it's thought of very highly, but I don't honestly know much about dash cams yet myself. Steve?
Will you be doing that soon? And you talk about it on your program?
I'll certainly be happy to look into it, yes.
Okay. I know there's a million of them out there, and just trying to find a decent one.
Right. There is actually a bunch of places that talk about dash cams.
Consumer Reports would probably have something.
Yeah, the big problem, Popular Mechanics has an article called Five of the Best Dash Cams. The big question is, how much do you want to spend, right? Because you get full HD, there's night vision, how big a hard drive, they don't use hard drive, SSD drives they have. So there's a lot of variables there. So best is a sliding scale.
Okay.
There's also a website called Dash Cam Talk.
Dash Cam Talks?
One Talk. Dashcamtalk.com.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, good luck.
Hey, I love your show.
Thanks. That's what we like to hear. Thank you.
Bye.
I know people that have gotten almost addicted to the Russian dash cam videos. Yeah, Nick too.
I admit it.
It's because fraud is so prevalent in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will jump out in front of you and claim you hit them.
Yeah.
That virtually everyone runs dash cams.
It's a camera.
A dashboard camera.
No, I know what they are.
And to prove that, no, you jumped in front of me. I didn't hit you. So it's, you know, who caused what accident.
Oh, okay.
And they pick up all these crazy. In fact, when that the asteroid hit Chelyabinsk, all of the picture, most of the pictures that came in from it were from dash cams.
Dash cams, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Now,
I'm proud that I just said Chelyabinsk right off the top of my head.
Very good. That's the part I wouldn't have gotten. That's
very good. Very good.
We don't know if it's right, but it's very good.
It sounded good to me.
So I got addicted to dash cams. It is clear that, A, there are no rules for driving in Russia.
Yeah.
Apparently, the little dotted lines on the doesn't matter. There's two people in a lane, and it just...
Go for it.
Every single person in Russia is constantly drunk. If you believe the... It's like watching martial arts movies.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in China clearly knows martial arts and wants to kill everybody else in China. I mean, that's the opinion you get when you watch those. Mm-hmm. That's the opinion you get when you watch these things. Everybody in Russia is drunk driving all the time. It's
good vodka.
Some of them are very funny, and some of them are kind of horrific.
Well, it's so cold there, you have to be driving.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of the dash cam stuff. And it's just, you look at some of that stuff and you shake your head and you think,
really?
Seriously? I don't. Yeah, yeah.
Scary what our society's coming to.
But I admit I'm addicted to them. They're not coming out fast enough. I don't know what to say about this. It's too bad. But the dash cams themselves, they're very useful for people who get into accidents.
Well, I heard that, you know, that type of thing going on down in Mexico too.
Yep.
If they see that you're an American citizen, you know, boom, they'll try to bump you and say you ran into them and everything else.
Yep. People will come in and just jump on the hood of your car and then claim you hit them.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite stories was a lot of bus drivers, especially city bus drivers, get sued all the time for accidents and whatnot. There was a case where the bus driver was pulling out of the bus garage before he ever made a stop. And you know, hit a sign or something. Five people got on the bus while they were waiting for the cops to show up and claimed they were injured in the accident.
Yeah, so people are putting dash cams on their cars for insurance purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm not an insurance adjuster. I do not know if you can save money on your insurance by having a dash cam. I don't know any of that. But people are certainly doing it in Russia and in some other countries and starting to do it in the United States for the very same reason. If you're stopped at a stoplight, the dash cam will tell the investigators whether, for example, you got rear-ended and therefore you rear-ended the car in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they know who to actually blame
for
that sort of thing. Or who, you know, often we see... you witness an accident.
Yeah.
And so you say, oh, the red car ran a red light and hit the blue car. But the dash cam will show that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of issue there.
Yeah.
And we all know eyewitnesses are incredibly unreliable. And so this is...
they get wrapped up into the moment, whereas the dash cam won't.
I saw a TV show where they had a psychologist and was talking about this, where they staged a purse snatching.
Right.
And they put in a fake witness that gave a completely different description of the snatcher, and three other witnesses agreed with him.
Yeah. Yeah, and they do that a lot when they're training officers, just they become one of the witnesses to a crime.
I've read about you're in a classroom or something like that. Somebody bursts the door open, shoots a toy gun and closes the door. What color were his socks?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but these dash cams, I've toyed with the idea of getting one, but I don't want to get one and just in case. The whole thing is that the dash cams are actually attracting the accidents. I'm not sure that's what's happening.
Or
sorry.
Theft to your car.
So I'm getting right.
You know, because they'll become the next hot thing, like, you know, CD players and everything else, or when they had the Garmins.
Radar detectors in the olden days. Yeah, they.
I don't even know how expensive they are.
And this dash cam talk, they start at $40.
Yeah, so maybe nobody's going to steal a $40 dash cam. What are you going to get, $10 for it, $5? Maybe. But so what? So we see a lot. And so there are entire channels on YouTube devoted to these dash cam accident videos.
Mm-hmm.
Road rage incidents and and all of that stuff, and just stupid drivers. So you see a lot of that. That's all over the place there. But a lot of people are getting them for the insurance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you get money off or what companies offer money off or whatever, but I know that a lot of people are getting it so that at the very least they can say, look, I was stopped at a light.
Mm-hmm.
This guy made a turn and scraped me.
Yep.
You know, that sort of thing. So they're out there and they're more and more people are getting them. So we'll see. It's an interesting phenomenon, and if you're interested in watching drunk people hit each other, I can recommend a couple of YouTube channels.
There's a discreet model for $85 that you put like in your grill, so they don't know. So they don't know you've got a camera.
Very nice. I got bumped in my rear bumper the other day. Some poor woman, clearly not young, clearly not paying any attention. No damage to either car, but I could tell she was hiding a cell phone when I got out of the car, and she suddenly whipped her hand down from her ear behind her back.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I always drive with one hand behind my back because I don't have lumbar support in the car.
Yeah.
There
was just a Mythbusters episode on this week where they tested distracted driving, and they did cell phone in your hand, hands-free cell phone, and they're just as hazardous.
Yep, they're all the same.
You're distracted, period.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and you can give us a call. There's still time, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, that's not interesting. I'm looking for an interesting story to tell. Apple streaming TV service is delayed into 2016.
The unannounced TV service that doesn't exist yet has been delayed again.
Yeah, exactly. What seems, I won't read the entire news story, but what it seems is that Apple's talks with major TV networks like CBS and 21st Century Fox are progressing at a very, very slow pace, which means that Apple is lacking content. What they did with the music industry, where Steve Jobs essentially bullied people into selling their songs too cheaply, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
right? Before they made, you know, billion, everybody made $1 billion on it. It was too cheap. And he was able to talk people into doing it. So far, the current people who are doing that at Apple are not able to get companies like CBS or HBO or, you know, any of those to drop their prices enough that Apple will make a considerable margin.
They already have agreements to play their content through the existing Apple TV. And part of that story is that the next Apple TV might be delayed because of this. So it's all coming down to money. You know, they have agreements to play the content, but the other end wants to get paid
more.
Well,
the other end is technical, because the problem is not most people in America don't have high bandwidth.
Right.
Like, you know, me, I have high bandwidth. But the rest of you don't. You normal peons do not have it. So
insert unbroadcastable word here.
Yeah.
So one of the problems they have is if you don't have a reliable low bandwidth way of delivering content, and particularly if it can't be something along the lines of local content, local delivery, where it's coming from closer to you than from from way the heck over the internet somewhere.
Saying it without saying it.
Exactly. that's a problem, and Apple hasn't solved that either. Right now, they'd have to shoot it across the country from one of Apple's data centers. That is going to introduce its own sets of lags and things like that.
Right.
Nothing to do with that last mile, whether you've got fiber or cable or whatever. But if or DSL, you know, that lag throughout the country. So there's an issue with that. And Apple is not sure quite what they're going to do about that right at the moment.
And it's the same deal that all the other set-top box companies are trying to do, too, between the Roku box and the Sling box. And several companies have already announced. In fact, Roku has one where you can subscribe to a several TV channels over the Internet and not need to have cable TV. You don't get every channel you might want, but there's different packages. And most of the time, there's a sports package. And that seems that's one of the biggest issues that cable cutters have,
right.
Is that trying to watch live sports can be tricky.
Well, but for years now, one of the guys who used to work for me bought an MLB package, Major League Baseball,
yeah.
which showed every single game for the entire season. I don't think he left his office for 3 months.
Yeah.
and so, you know, that at least is available. So
I think
yeah.
football is bigger because of the blackout
right,
rules.
Right. But he was, yeah. I don't know about that.
So
but
then you have to VPN to California so you can watch the Bills game.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll see that coming. We will see all of that coming. There's no doubt. It's just these are the growing pains. The other thing I wanted to talk about is Google has launched their own Wi-Fi router called OnHub. On Tuesday they launched this. And it's their, you know, they've got this big effort going on for connected homes, drawing more users to Google services, and this is the way to do it. And it's cylindrically shaped, very much like the Amazon, whatever that's called.
Echo.
It's cylindrically shaped.
Echo.
It's a two. Stop. It's $200 from online retailers, which include the Google Store and Amazon and Walmart.com. And it comes with built-in antennas. That will scan the airwaves to spot the fastest connection, which is an interesting idea. And you can prioritize certain devices so they can get the fastest internet speed for data-heavy activities. So, for example, if you always stream movies to an iPad, you can go into – and it's an app that you run on your phone, and you can go into – the app and say when you're connected to the iPad, give that the priority.
Some of that's just features of the 802.11ac.
Well, that's available on every router. Most people, A, don't know it,
yep.
and B, it's a lot harder to get to
than
just it's an app that says this one, do this. So that's pretty nice.
And you're fighting your wife and kids who make their app the priority.
Yep, exactly.
So now we're back to 10 priorities and none of them work.
Right. Well, you don't give them the password. That's how that works. And it'll automatically update with new features, the latest security upgrades, which is a big deal, very much like the Android OS and the Chrome browser do now. The router is currently being made by a company called TP-Link, but Google also hinted that Asus could be a manufacturer in the future. And of course, this happened days after Google restructured itself by creating a company called Alphabet Inc., which is a holding company that holds companies, that are built from the many subsidiaries that were originally just part of Google. And that way, they can separate the core web advertising business from newer ventures like driverless cars and stuff like that, making products for the smart home, which is what this does. Of course, Google's also been working on providing faster internet with Google Fiber, and it's also trying to expand the reach of the internet with Project Loon, under which it has floating balloons 20 kilometers above the Earth's surface to beam internet connections to rural and remote areas.
Until the Facebook drones shoot them down.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm kind of fascinated by Project Loon. It does sound Looney Tunes, but apparently they're working on that. The balloon part works. The internet part works. And now they've got frickin' laser beams on the balloon's heads that can hit a coin-sized target on the ground with some really fair consistency. They don't need to hit coin-sized targets. They can make them bigger.
You put the Jiffy Pop thing under the Jiffy,
that's right. The real genius. Great film. I'm reminded of the words of Aristotle, who said, I drank what? Anyway, great movie. Great movie.
Okay.
Great movie. A young Val Kilmer before he became a jerk.
1985.
Is it?
God, we're old.
We are old. Jeez and crackers, we're old. I really like that film. That's a fun film.
Yep.
It's a moral imperative.
William
Kent. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. But it's a fun film all the way around. If you get a chance to see it, it's called Real Genius. And it's a fun movie. Apple has said that only 21% of United States users who have tested Apple Music no longer use it.
And those are all the journalists that signed up to review it.
Probably.
I love how this story started in a lot of the news blogs is, 70% of Apple Music users have canceled the service. And Apple, no, it was only 20%.
Yeah, right. That's still 20%. That's a fairly high number.
Yeah. Well, it was free, so I'll try it for free.
Well, and that's just it. When you give away something for free, everybody's going to try it. Not everybody's going to find it worth spending money on.
Yep.
Now, Apple
people... Because they're probably already paying for Spotify or Pandora or one of the other ones, too.
Right. And that's a large part of it. Apple people do tend to spend much more profligately than everybody else.
Yeah. That icon suddenly popped up on your iPhone.
Yeah, right. Right. But so it's 28% of the respondents to a poll said that they who were trying out Apple Music said they also had Spotify or one of those. Now, Spotify's in their own problem right now, which of course is that they've changed their privacy regulations and they want to be able to access your camera to take pictures of you and access your microphone to be able to listen to you and do all this other stuff, and people are dropping that service left and right. So that was a stupid move on their part. And they don't seem to be backing down. They've apologized for doing it, but they haven't stopped doing it. They've essentially said, oh, no, what's the term they're using? Oh, we're doing this to make it more social.
Yeah.
You know, being able to take your picture or talk to your friends or hear what you're playing, whatever that's about. All right, that music tells me that we are done for another week. You've spent 2 hours of your life on this nonsense. What were you thinking? Clearly not much, and because we know that Saturdays are days we don't think, we're going to do this again for you next week. So don't forget to listen in. In the meantime, don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is back to keep him on the straight and narrow, so we'll be very lucky to see there probably won't be much bloodshed over the next 3 hours, so it should be all right. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 55 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.